Live from the tiny little moment between when things are bad to when things are super worse, but for the little moment, it seems kind of okay. This is the Punk News Podcast, episode 507, if we're still numbering these. I don't even know.
There's spooky action at a distance, bring me back to the sea.
Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, out of the land formerly known as Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile. John, is everything a just like apocalyptic hellscape now? And you live in a bunker and fight mutants and
Well, to Philadelphia's credit, Pennsylvania and Philadelphia is one of the states that has been handling the whole COVID thing more responsibly, going off statistics and people wearing masks and that kind of thing. And listen, man, I'm a broken record, but listen, let's just keep wearing their masks. Let's not do stupid stuff. Let's not go see Smash Mouth for a couple of months. And let's get out of this, because I think the recent numbers are improving. And so let's just keep on that trend and let's do it. So instead of, you know, chastising ourselves and saying we're doing a bad job, it looks like we actually might be pulling it together, because we're actually starting to listen to science again, like we did at the beginning, but not at the middle. But now we are again. And now that people are listening to science, it looks like it's improving, which, wow, what a mysterious connection. Science says this is how it probably works, and it turns out it works that way. Wow, what a surprise. So listen, let's be positive. Let's do what the bad brains always tell us to do. PMA, positive mental attitude. Let's keep wearing the masks. Let's not be stupid, and let's get over this hump, baby. We can do it. And in November, vote him out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah, right, right. But John, the mutants, right? Like,
mutants are cool, Adam. I'm tired of your mutism. Oh. Mutants are cool, and people have a rich cultural heritage. I will not stand for your mutism, Adam. You've always hated mutants, and I know you've tried to hide it in the fact, but with the recent administration, you no longer have fear, and you openly say how much you hate mutants. That's shame on you, Adam. Shame on you. Mutants are cool.
I know. It used to be that I had to keep my anti-mutant agenda really close to my chest, but now you can just say it, and, you know, there's no consequence. It's great. Hi, Hallie. How are you?
I'm good. And speaking of vote him out, I just registered to vote yesterday, which sounds like I waited until very late in the game. And I did. And I'll tell you why, because I had to change my driver's license to my new state that I live in. And the DMVs had been closed for so long that when they opened back up again, it was like really seriously impossible to go. You'd go and the line would be like, you weren't going to get in. You could wait online all day and they weren't going to see you. So I finally just like bit the bullet and I woke up super early and I was there all day, but damn it, I got my license and I'm registered to vote and I did it. And I'll just say, like, that was difficult. Like COVID made that incredibly difficult for me. And I luckily have a husband who right now can like stay home with my baby so that I could go and wait all day. It made me really worried for, it made me worried for a lot of people, like, just because it does seem like there are a lot of stumbling blocks right now for people in voting. And I experienced it myself. So it made me a little worried, but I persevered. I registered to vote. Everyone just do it. Like if there's any reason that you're not registered yet, just do it like tomorrow, because you just don't know what delays are going to be involved. And like, let's get this done, people. John's right.
I don't want to sound callous, because like, yes, all of that, everything Hallie said and what John was ranting is stuff that you should do, pro mutant or not. But there's something that is so surreal to me to hear you guys talk about this, because and this isn't an American is bad comment, because you know you know you're bad. But this is like I'm from a place that has automatic voter registration, so this whole conversation is strange. Like, why is there a thing to do at all?
Yeah.
Like,
And what's crazy is, like, I hear you say that, and I'm like, whoa, it could be that way. But, like, of course it could be that way.
Well, just, like, so the way it works up here is when we do our taxes, I'm pretty sure there's a box somewhere on the tax form, and it's probably checked by default or something like that, that says, like, I permit the Canadian equivalent of the IRS to give my personal information to the Canadian equivalent of, I don't know, whoever runs the voting in America. And then like just when there is an election, at some point, like a voter card shows up in our mail and it has our name on. Like there's nothing to do. So,
right. Like that's what happens when your government actually wants all the people to be able to vote.
Yeah, right? I wouldn't go that so far as to claim that our governments are competent or anything. Don't get me wrong, because they're horrible. But but just I'm just saying it just like takes one tiny hoop out of trying to run a democracy. So you guys should check that out once you're not on fire anymore. Pretty good shit.
Great. We'll look into that. Yeah, thank you.
You should totally look into that. Anyway, so we're going to talk about, we don't have any mail this week because the post office is all fucked up for political reasons. So what we're going to do is we're going to briefly dip into our non-regular record collecting segment and talk about some things that a few people have acquired, despite the fact that there's a deadly super virus. And then we're going to commemorate a few people that we have lost. And we're going to talk about some punk news. So, John, you want to kick off the record collecting stuff here? And if you want to send us mail, by the way, it is podcast@punknews.org. That is how you do that.
We actually haven't done record collecting for a while. Every once in a while on the Punk News podcast, we like to talk about cool records that we got. And here are some cool records that I've gotten. Cool record number one. The past few years have been a boon for Rolling Stones fans because historically, the Rolling Stones have been reticent to reissue their stuff or to release archive material, or to release the outtakes. And I guess to his credit, Mick Jagger is famously protective of the Rolling Stone legacy, and not that it's not without blemishes, that there are a few missteps here or there, but he doesn't want to turn it into like something like, I love Hawkwind, but there is a lot of Hawkwind garbage out there. And of course, the Rolling Stones are a much more famous band than Hawkwind. Or how about the Stooges, another example. The Stooges are absolutely amazing. There's a lot of garbage out there. So Mick Jagger quite famously has been reticent to reissue, release, and remaster Rolling Stone material. Within the past few years, I don't know if he's become more lax or if he's become more focused. And the last few years for the Rolling Stones fans have been amazing. Eagle Rock has been putting out a number of excellent, excellent live albums. I think they've done like 7 of them so far. Throughout their career, they're great. They've also been reissuing some of their classic albums, Sticky Fingers, Exile on Main Street, Some Girls. Goat's Head Soup, a lesser classic, just got reissued, and it's a really well-done reissue. But the one that I'm going to talk about is the Rolling Stones have been reissuing their almost all their, I guess, post-ABCO records albums. So everything from some Sticky Fingers on as half-speed mastered vinyl reissues. And I don't even exactly know what half-speed mastered means. As I've been explained, it means they tape it. I mean, they record it to the record at half speed and then speed it up, I guess, so you get a more nuanced, full sound. More nuanced, and you get, I guess, every sound information you can get out of it. Like people's fingers touching.
Like there's more data in there or something?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. So like, whereas you couldn't hear somebody coughing before, now you can, which blows my mind. Like that cough's been on a tape for literally 50 years and it's still there, which blows my mind. So anyways, I'm really not an audiophile, and I've always, said, being too much of an audiophile is kind of silly, but I hate to say it, more and more, I've been becoming more of an audiophile. So I got a couple of the Rolling Stone half-speed master reissues. The Sticky Finger one sounds pretty good. The Tattoo You one sounds really good. But the Some Girls one sounds amazing. Oh, and so did the Black and Blue one. Both of those records, they're 70s records, they're late 70s records. And that's when they were doing both punk and soul. And those reissues are like really, really good. And I think I'm going to get them all just so I can have the whole set eventually. I've been getting them one at a time. But if you want Rolling Stones on record and you don't have them on record yet, get those records. If you already have them on record, maybe you don't need them unless you're an ultra fan like me, but they're doing a really nice job with those. Something else that I got was I was going to say what it was, but I can't remember what it was. One other thing I got is, so last year, or maybe it was even, I think it was last year, the Melvins released a split 10-inch with a band called Shit Kid. Shit Kid is two women from Sweden, and they're an aggressive punk/post-punk band. And the Melvins were supposed to take them on tour. Then out of the blue, The Melvins said, I think the Melvins didn't even say it. I think Shit Kid said, we're not touring with the Melvins anymore. And don't buy our split with the record with the Melvins. And then the Melvins just kind of quietly said, tour is going to be us, Red Cross, and Toshi Kasai, whereas it had been Shit Kid instead of Toshi Kasai. And everyone's like, what happened? So Shit Kid put out a zine. It's called Buzzkill, which, of course, is a diss on Buzz Osborne of the Melvins. And the goal of the zine is to show that Buzz Osborne is a jerk and a prick. It doesn't show that. But it's a very interesting study, I guess, in the idea of artistic freedom, feminism, and I guess just creativity and censorship in 2020. What the zine reveals is that the Melvins, to promote the 10-inch record, they had a pencil drawing of a naked lady in like a 50s Playboy pose. But the face was a grotesque clown face. And then Shit Kid wrote to the Melvins kind of brusquely. They were like, we're not cool with this. Why are you doing this? You should make it a naked man, not a naked lady. And then Buzz Osborne replies, okay, we'll make it a naked man. We don't care. They're like, this is anti-feminism or whatever. And then he said to them, well, it was made by a woman artist, and we didn't even tell her what to draw. She drew it and gave it to us. It'd be anti-feminist of us to try to censor her work. And so the zine is a verbal battle between Shit Kid and the Melvins fighting over this issue. They never really get rude, but it's a heated exchange. And I think it's very interesting because there are solid points on both sides of the battle. And I think it's a really interesting read. And if you're a Melvins fan or Shit Kid fan, or you're just interested in looking at these things, I guess, from both sides, it's a really, really interesting read. The last thing – oh, I know what the other thing I want to talk about. Alice in the Bag, the Bags. One of the first West Coast punk bands. The Bags only put out two singles, I believe, or maybe it's one single and then one single after the fact. There is a collection of their entire output, all the singles, all the unreleased live stuff, some demos, and even some unreleased studio tracks. It's called All Bagged Up. And for a long time, it's been a very extensive release. It was sold out. And so the only way you could get it was spending $60 on it or whatever. Artifacts Records, who put it out, found a whole bunch of them, and they're up on Discogs right now for like $12. And I got one, and wowee. I mean, you know, as you get older, the less stuff you hear blows your mind. You hear stuff that you dig, but it doesn't always blow your mind like it does when you're 15, 16, 17, 20, even 25. And I got to say, like this Bags album, along with the Nuns unreleased album, along with the Screamers unreleased album, it is one of the greatest West Coast punk records ever. I mean, it is on fire. I can't believe I didn't, you know, make more of an effort. I saw it for once, say, on Amoeba Records like 15 years ago, and I didn't buy it, and I always have been thinking about it ever since. I finally got it. Go out. I'm telling you, pause this podcast, run out to Discogs, look up Alice in the Bag, or the Bags, All Bagged Up, get that 12-inch for like $12 or $14. Astoundingly good early West Coast punk rock. Hallie Bullock, anything cool lately?
I don't know that I would call it punk, but I don't know. I like punk, and I love this freaking album. There was a reissue of this artist Mira. Adam, do you know Mira? Because she's Canadian. I feel like all Canadians know all Canadians.
I don't think I do. Who's Mira?
Really? Okay, Mira's awesome. She's like a singer-songwriter, but like the melodies are like absolutely undeniable, and like she does really, really smart and interesting stuff with production, and like you know, I feel like she was kind of like looping stuff back before everyone was looping stuff. I don't know, she's just incredibly smart and cool. Her songwriting is like you can't beat it. And they did a 20-year reissue of an album of hers called You Think It's Like This But Really It's Like This. And like, I absolutely love this album song for song. I just think it's awesome. And I think this re-release is worth talking about because they did a really cool thing where it's like a double LP that the first LP is just a remastered reissue of the old album. And then the second LP is like all artists that she like loves and respects all covering songs on the album, which I just thought was like a really creative and cool thing to do. And like, of the stuff that's on that like cover album, I think like Alison Crutchfield probably does my favorite cover on there. Alison Crutchfield, who's on, Merge Records and plays with Swearin. She does like a cover of the song La Familia that I love. So that was like kind of a, just, I don't know, just a cool thing. And an album that I wasn't sure, like, if I, you know, when you love an album and you're not sure how many other people love it, because like, I don't like have a lot of friends that I like talk about Mira with, but like, it was cool that they did this reissue. Cause I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. This album is as important to other people as it is to me.
Mira is the first, second or third interview I ever did.
Oh, is that right? That's so cool. Wait, when are we talking about?
That would have been about 2007, actually 2006 or 2007.
That's awesome. And was she cool to talk to?
She was cool. I used to do this thing that I don't do now, is near the end, I would ask like wacky questions, like not even rude questions, just weird questions. I said, Digital Underground or Black Flag? And like, she didn't like that question. And so, but she answered it, but kudos to her. And she was nice and polite, and the interview was fine, but that's not the kind of artist, like she's a very serious artist, and I don't, to her credit, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you even wacky questions, you know what I mean? But she was cool. She was cool.
But you don't want someone to be like so serious that they can't like handle a little bit of wacky, right?
True, unless it's somebody like Nick Blinko. Well, actually, Nick Blinko is funny. I agree, 100%. You're 100%.
But anyhow, so I've been enjoying that. And then actually, it's I got it on tape because you can only get it on tape. And actually, I'll talk about this briefly because I think I've talked about it on here before, but I finally purchased it. There's this band, Stealing Fans, that is like one of the guys from the Fleshies, who I like love, and the Fleshies are from Oakland, if anyone's like a Fleshies fan. And and another guy from a band that I don't know, that his band was called Swanox, it looks like, or Swanox. But this is their band is called Stealing Fans, and they put out a tape that's just called Tape. And for any fans of New Wave, this is like such a godsend. Like, I am so excited to have like a really rock solid new, like New Wave album to listen to. This is absolutely like, I would have absolutely loved this back when I was like listening to like Psychedelic Furs or like any of that kind of stuff. So if there's any punks that also like slide over into New Wave, I think this tape is just absolutely excellent. I'm enjoying it so much. I like can't remember the last time I was like, oh, I think I want to listen to this album until I know like all of the words. And I feel that way about this. So the tape is just called Tape. And it's on, like many things I talk about on this podcast, it's on Let's Pretend Records. And I'm liking that a lot. That's what I got.
On a side note, Hallie, you played a track by a band called Anxiety something on Let's Pretend, right?
Yes. Oh my God, I love that album. Okay, yes. Sorry, what were you going to say about it?
Hey, I checked that tape out. That tape is mega rad. And everyone
it's should go so check it. Good, right? Yeah. That Anxiety stuff's amazing.
B, I didn't even know this. It's a small world. Two out of the three of the people in that band are in a band called Sial, S-I-A-L. That's a crazy good Malaysian hardcore band that played Philadelphia last year and blew everybody's mind. What a weird connection. Is it like it's, I think the singer's from America and the other two people are from Malaysia. Rad. Yeah. Totally rad.
Yeah, completely excellent music coming out from excellent people.
Adam, you got anything cool lately?
No, I mean, nope. No, I have not. Do people go anywhere, get anything? How do you get things? I don't know how you get things. I'm just.
There's the internet.
Oh God, I try to avoid both. Really, no, I have nothing. I'm just.
Isn't that your job, the internet?
Yeah, but it's one of those things where like it's your job, and then when you get home, you don't want any more internet. It's the last thing that I want. Like I want to come home from work and go like sit in the forest for a while. So I have nothing. I'm going to make a lot of sitting in the forest references because I'm taking the kids camping this weekend. So it's really on my mind right now. So there we go. People have bought things. You should buy things too. Before we get going, we have a couple of bits that we want to mention, that we want to bring up here. So the first thing here is Sid McRae, who was the first singer for Bad Brains, passed away on September 9th, 2020. Now, McCrae left the band before they recorded any of their studio material, but he is credited with introducing them to punk rock during a period when they were still a jazz group by the name of Mind Power. So he reunited with them for a few short performances in 2017, and you can find footage of that on YouTube. We have it linked up on Punk News right now. Bad Brains issued a short statement that just said, you know, RIP to the Don, my brother, sail on. And there you go. So, you know, our condolences from Punk News goes out to McRae's family and friends. John, what do you got to say about Sid McRae and his Bad Brains history?
Yeah, these kinds of things are always difficult because, you know, it's sad whenever anybody dies, really. But it's not as though, you know, I sat up thinking about Sid McRae, like, oh, I'm so glad Sid McRae was in the Bad Brains. He's a figure that was important in that he introduced the band to punk rock, certainly. And I believe he actually wrote some of the lyrics of some of the songs. But it's not as though he you know, drove the band through their classic era. And so you want to pay him the appropriate amount of respect, but you don't want to be phony either. So it's sad, and I think we should salute a guy and be appreciative that he contributed what he did, which helped this great band achieve greatness. And then that's how you handle it. You know, I'm not going to lie and say, oh yeah, man, Sid McRae. Although sometimes it's like the unknown guys are kind of the most important guys. And I'm backing myself into a corner here. I'm sad that Sid McRae has passed away. That's sad, but I appreciate the wonderful things he contributed to the Bad Brains. How about that, Adam?
Yeah, that makes sense, right? It's like, it's understandable that when it's a personality that was not there for the band's like recorded or touring or popular history, it's kind of hard to get a total read on what their legacy means. So, but yeah, you know, cheers to Sid, I guess. So there was another pretty notable death from the punk rock and adjacent universe over the past week here. And that is that a reggae icon, Toots Hibbert, the lead vocalist of Toots and the Maytals. You say Maytals or Maytals?
I say Maytals. What do you say, Hallie?
You add an I in think, there?
Yeah, I think also Maytals.
Yep.
Are right. We crazy?
I'll give it to the room, but I phonetically don't agree with you. Anyways, so Toots Hibbert passed away. He was 77. He had been placed recently in a medically induced coma due to complications from COVID-19. Hibbert's family released a statement. They said, "It is with the heaviest of hearts to announce that Frederick Nathaniel Toots Hibbert passed away peacefully tonight, surrounded by his family at the University Hospital of the West Indies in Kingston, Jamaica. His family and his management team would like to thank the medical teams and professionals for their care and diligence, and we ask that you respect their privacy during their time of grief. Mr. Hibbert is survived by his wife of 39 years, Miss D, and his 7 of 8 children." Now, Toots and the Maytals just released their first LP in 10 years. It's called Got to Be Tough. So that just came out. So, you know, our condolences to the family and fans of Toots Hibbert, who I think that, like, we can probably talk a little bit more about, because like holy shit, there was an artist that had impact on our little corner of the universe. So John, you want to jump in and I'll throw something in.
Well, it's tough to overstate the importance of Toots with regards to reggae, ska, and rock steady, only because he was extremely popular, massively popular in the UK, and that thereafter popular in the USA. All of the original two-tone groups are huge fans of Toots, particularly 54, 46 was my number, Monkey Man. Also an artist that just never stopped, kept doing it, kind of like Jimmy Cliff, you know, unrelentingly just put out album after album after album, track after track after track, toured all the time and seemingly loved to play these songs live. If you think of the number of times he did Monkey Man or 54, 46 live, it's like, oh, my, or Pressure Drop. Oh, massively influenced on The Clash. The Clash did Pressure Drop, and I think even one other unreleased Toots cover. Maybe only one. But but also like Toots music rippled through dance hall. Yellow Man famously did a version of 54, 46. Monkey Man has been covered by a lot of dance hall guys. And so if you just want to talk about the spirit of ska, reggae, and rocksteady, the spirit of, I guess, really connecting different cultures. Toots always seemed to really be interested in representing Jamaica, but not walling his art off from non-Jamaican artists. To the contrary, he seemed to embrace when the UK and USA artists, like No Doubt, would cover Two to the Maytales and kind of expand the message. Unlike some other artists that maybe perhaps somewhat understandably would get very bitter when a cover version would be more popular than their original version, Toots seemed to embrace that, and I think that's one of the things that gave him longevity. And I think he just made amazing music, and it is sad that he's gone, especially under such circumstances. It's also sad that they said he survived by, what, 8 of his 9 children, which that's an extremely sad statement right there. You know, not 9 of his 9 children, 8 of his 9.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that is a bummer. But as far as musical legacies go, as far as, you know, just being an extremely important artist, and as far as never really disgrace, I don't know, never really making yourself look bad. He was always Toots, and he always did great music. Just a fantastic artist all around. One of the most important Jamaican artists of all time, without a doubt.
And like, I think importantly, like for someone coming from like the punk rock world, like a gateway artist, like to me, like the gateway artist, right? Like I heard The Clash playing Pressure Drop, you know, for the longest time before I even knew it was a cover, right? Let alone that it was a cover of an old ska song. And then, you know, The Clash covering Pressure Drop is, you know, you directly hop from that over to say like, you know, The Harder They Come soundtrack, that's then getting you into, you know, other stuff from the Mydals, but also the Jimmy Cliff universe. And just like there's like a 2 or 3 hop, you know, path that you can take from The Clash covering Pressure Drop to all of a sudden taking some, like, you know, punk kid that knows nothing about reggae and throwing him, you know, into the old 60s catalog of the old Trojan catalog, right? Like you can get right into that, and the direct line for it was Toots and the Maytals. So, you know, that's just hugely important for me from my own sort of, you know, especially for me as a teenager, to start like branching out from the sort of safe, you know, white kid rock and roll forms of music that I was into at the time. Like this was the gateway band. This was a gateway artist, like just massively important.
I just want to talk about the fact that his wife just goes by Miss D, because she sounds so freaking cool. Can you imagine? You're just running around, you're a couple, and you just go by Toot and Miss D. I just want to say I wish I had hung out with these people before the demise of Toot.
You own that name so much that like it's in your husband's obituary. Like that's pretty awesome, right?
Completely. This is super sad. I will say, in just sort of like poking around and just like reading stuff about him and the band after he died, I think my favorite little like fun fact that I came across, I don't know if you guys saw this anywhere, but they made an attempt to get into the Guinness Book of World Record. Did you guys know this?
Oh, no.
They tried to get into the Guinness Book of World Record by recording, like mixing and mastering and like pressing an album and getting it into stores all within 24 hours. So this is totally amazing to me. So they recorded like a live performance and then like got the tapes to engineers who like picked a running order, like, and then they had like a pressing plant like ready to go. They pressed them. They managed to get it to the stores within 24 hours. Of when it had been recorded, and they did it successfully by all accounts, and they still didn't make it into the Guinness Book of World Records, because you have to tell Guinness, you have to tell that organization that you're making an attempt at breaking a record so that they can send like one of their official like judges, who I've actually met one of those guys. They come in like a blazer that has like the Guinness like world record like emblem on it. It's completely amazing. But they didn't do that. They didn't like notify the organization beforehand, so they didn't actually get a world record. And then another band like many years later basically just did the same thing, and now they're in the Guinness Book. That's my random fun fact.
Wow. is the this is totally off topic now, but I want to talk about the guy from the like the Guinness judge. Like, is it just like a guy from the brewery, or is it a?
No, I don't think it's. I don't know. Is it related to the brewery? I actually don't know that.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
So yeah, they have a it's a very like sought after thing to be like one of their official judges. And I was like at an event that was being like judged, and like the guy had to be there the whole time with his little clipboard and his little blazer, and he's like very official. And I'm like sort of like I'm like have a weird like fascination actually with like those record holders. And so I was, yeah, I was like pretty starstruck. I thought it was cool, but I didn't know that it was actually also related to the brewery.
I'm almost positive it's related to the brewery. I don't know if it is anymore, but it is, it branched out of the brewery at some point. I'm sure it's its own, its own, you know, media empire at this point, but it is. So anyways, to Tibbert, RIP. John, what song are you going to play? Cause I might fight you.
Well, I didn't know we were going to brawl over Toots. I was going to do 5446 just because it's covered by Yellow Man, covered by Sublime, awesome song. But what are you thinking, Adam? Do the reggae pressure drop because it was covered by The Clash, Monkey Man? What are you thinking? I'm saying 54.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I would have if it was you know, you can't go on with like Funky Kingston or something. But yeah, no, do it. Do 54. Do it.
This is Toots talking about how he got arrested for a minor marijuana charge and had to do, I think, like 18 months in jail, which was kind of silly. And it's a great track, 5446 by Toots and the Maytals, off the first album, Sweet and Dandy.
Speak a little mister. Yeah, what I said, I get it.
Yeah. All right, we're back talking about some of the news in this past week. First of all, John's good buddy, David Johansson, cropped up seemingly randomly before we posted this story, or before we recorded this podcast. So David Johansson, of course, of the New York Dolls, he has released a cover of the Calypso song "Sinking Ship" by the singer Gypsy, aka Winston Edward Peters. And the cover appears in a video where, which is actually shot by, directed by Johansson's daughter, Leah Hennessy, and modifies the original lyrics of the song to be very much about, the 2020 political landscape in the US. John, I think people may have a hard time trying to contextualize how seriously to take a strange, goofy David Johansson song full of modern day political references, especially one that he sings wearing like a little sailor suit. So can you put some context on this here?
Pearls before swine, Adam. Pearls before swine. This is genius. First off, David Johansson, singer of the New York Dolls, also Buster Poindexter, also actor in Bill Murray's movie Scrooge. Amazing artist. But also not afraid to get silly and goofy, but also make an important point within that silliness and goofiness. What a lot of people probably don't know about this song is this was actually a mammoth Calypso song in 86, I think. It was about the political strife in Trinidad at the time. And it was like a massive song, like a lot of Calypso and even a lot of dancehall and reggae numbers. The song was almost as much a news report as it was a song. And it was like commenting on things that happened that week or that month, as opposed to, you know, a song that could be played at any time, with like a lot of Calypso is. And so David Johansson, quite cleverly and quite in line with his Buster Poindexter persona, has taken an unexpected cover and morphed it to, I guess, appeal or fit with his own audience and to kind of explain to them what's happening in 2020. And also, but the thing is unlike, say, I'm trying to think of an artist that might be overly, well, pick any artist you can think of that's overly serious. David Johansson is willing to... He's willing to wear essentially like a 7-year-old or actually more like a 4-year-old sailor's outfit, but guys, and like dance around while he's singing this very serious song about, and also a very beautiful and clever song about the strife in the year 2020, and while making a serious point. And also it's the song is what we call an admonition. It's lamenting what used to be and is now, and hoping that things can be corrected. But also I will, man, you gotta give, listen, most non-Jamaican art, well, most non-Caribbean artists, cause Gypsy's not Jamaican, he's a Trinidad. Most non-Caribbean artists should never, ever, ever touch Caribbean music. It never works out unless you're Sublime and that's it. Right. So, or if you're in the UK, if you're in the UK and you have Caribbean roots, then it's fair too. But unless you're Sublime, never, ever, ever touch Caribbean music. Except David Joe. David Joe is one of the few people that can cover like Cab Calloway, cover Louis Armstrong. I mean, they're not Caribbean, but they've got those very, very iconic voices. Or cover, you know, Calypso music, Trinidad music, and doing it convincingly, maintaining respect, but without, quote, appropriating it. I think it's quite clear that he's saying, this is from the Caribbean and now I'm using it. He's not saying I made this up. So he's doing it extremely tastefully, but also with the respect and reverence it's owed. And David Joe is the man. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's knocks it out of the park decade after decade. David Joe. Not everything's a home run, but when it is a home run, it's out of the park and into the next park over. And this track, Adam, is a home run.
It's funny because when you think about people that, like, say, like lay people that aren't aware of the music history of it, that may be, you know, familiar with Hot 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 as just like a strange like one hit wonder. I would be willing to bet that the majority of those people would assume that that is the product of a Caribbean artist in the first place. So for him,
yeah, that's what I,
pardon.
When I was little, I would have bet anything that it was like a I didn't even know what a Caribbean was when I was like 6, but I thought it was somebody like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Like exactly. I'm sure I did too at the time. So it's funny that he can turn around and, you know, pick up and recontextualize a piece of Caribbean music and have that not seem like appropriation. It's weird. He has carved out a strange place for himself in the in the overall cultural tapestry. So, you know, cool.
I mean, I think the thing specifically about this that doesn't make it seem like cultural appropriation is that the song was written in the spirit of, you know, political dissent. And he is, you know, also trying to use it for very serious, like, political dissent. But I'm with you, Adam, in that, like, it is awfully goofy. Like, I don't know really, like, how effective it is as, like, a political protest song, right? But, I, you know, I'll say this. I am at the point where, like, if I just have to hear Trump's voice, like, on the news or something, I start to feel like I'm going to have a stroke. So, like, the fact that anything Trump-related could just make me kind of, like, this did kind of make me laugh because it was so goofy. And I actually feel like that's a pretty big accomplishment at this point to, like, you know, and I don't know if that's what he was going for to make people laugh. I have to assume so, because like you said, he's in this like child sailor suit. but it was right. It was the thing is tonally, I wasn't exactly sure how I was supposed to feel about it, but I know how I did feel about it, which is that it made me laugh and I appreciated that.
What do you guys think of Chance's extremely creepy mustache that only Cab Calloway and no one else should have?
I think that fits into the whole thing, though. Is like I've never in my life really grasped how I'm supposed to take Johansson's work from a tonal standpoint. Like I'm never sure. I'm never sure if a lot of things are meant to be funny or if they are funny, and I'm finding something serious and funny, and I shouldn't. But it's never not disarming for me, but I think that's kind of one of the good things about it, is that it's a consistent, if it's a bit, it's a consistent bit. And if it's not a bit, it definitely kind of like lives and breathes on its own and doesn't need someone to, you know, explain why it's cute or anything like that. Like it's a very interesting persona, and it's sort of amazing to me that it sort of lasted as long as it has. So yeah. So anyways, you should go check this out. It's quirky and strange and weird. And that's all I can ask for, really. So moving on. Iggy Pop. Iggy has allowed PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals organization, the right to use his song Free in connection with a campaign they have going on. The video that they put together that uses the song shows animals in laboratory test experiments with the song as a backdrop. Through PETA, Iggy issued a statement that says, "Anyone can see the pain and terror in these monkeys' eyes, and no one should have to suffer like this." The video features footage from PETA's investigations into the National Institute of Health's monkey fright tests, in which experiments were performed on monkeys. I'm not entirely sure, like, what does monkey fright mean? Did you look into this, John? Can you?
Well, so let me get it back. The way we came across this is we got a press release from PETA, where they tried to make it look like it wasn't a press release. They tried to make it look like it was just somebody writing to us, but it was clearly from PETA. And it also actually named all the scientists in the video when it had like their phone numbers and addresses and stuff. Mm. And I'm like, I can't get involved in that. You know what I mean? And so I didn't really look into what the monkey fright test was. I think what it is they scare monkeys in order to like test the effect on like dopamine or how dopamine is affected by that, so they can learn more, I guess, ostensibly about humans or whatever. Certainly, I am for ethical treatment of animals, and I am 100% behind all of that. And I think the core idea behind PETA is probably a good idea. But I have two bridges to talk about this conversation. The first is, when we experiment on animals, are we doing it arbitrarily in that we could do other methods and we're just using the animals because it's cheaper and easier? Or are we like doing cancer treatments on animals to see if it would be able to save humans and children? And if that's the case, then I'm sorry for the monkey, but if that treatment will save human beings and children, then that's kind of not the worst thing in the world. I feel bad for the monkey, but you know, it might be a necessary, quote, evil if it can save human lives. But if it's for, like, cosmetics or something, or if there's other ways to test it, and animals are just quicker and easier, then I'm fine with not testing on animals and exploring other avenues. I don't know. And unfortunately, this is one of these things that is so politicized, you're not going to get a straight answer from either side. So PETA is going to say, you know, no, it's every single thing is brutal on animals and we don't need to test on animals at all. But then the scientists are going to be like, we have to practice on animals because we can't practice these horrible experiments on humans. But, you know, and the reality is probably somewhere in the middle. So it's very tough to get an understanding of that question. That being said, I get creeped out by PETA a little bit. And I think their core message is probably a good message. So we get this press release, and I hacked out the vast majority of it. I can't be putting scientists' name, address, and phone numbers and that kind of stuff in the article, you know. And also they said Iggy Pop donated this song to PETA. He didn't donate this song to PETA. He let them use their song in their video. And I will say kudos to Iggy in that he's pro-animal rights. That's awesome. You know, a lot of other artists would probably say no, just they don't get caught up in the jam. So it's cool that Iggy is, you know, willing to, I guess, risk that in order – for this important cause. But like I've said, I get weirded out by PETA because whenever we post about politics or like PETA, we get these weird comments. And all, if you go to our Facebook, it's insane. But on the Punk News page, there's two people here that have never commented on Punk News before that they're, if you click on their profiles, it's like blocked. And then they're like, they're naming the information in the press release. They're like, it's long past time to end person XYZ's cruel, unusual, wasteful monkey fried experiments and invested in humane, human relevant research. And then someone else is like, Iggy's totally right. There are plenty of advanced non-animal research methods to conduct experiments instead of hurting and killing animals. So like, I guess it has people like Googling PETA and they go and comment on that. But I wouldn't mind if they said, we are PETA and this is our message. I get troubled and somewhat, uneasy when the person making the statement is trying to mask who they are.
Go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to just back up what John said there. Is this that's been what, having to handle PETA's approach to the press, I guess, if we're going to call ourselves the press, has been an interesting and fraught thing to have to dance around with Punk News since the start. If not only because of the kind of strange astroturfing tactics that they use, but because a lot of punk artists, I think sort of naturally fall into the Venn diagram of PETA supporters and of veganism and all this kind of stuff, that you get a lot of punk artists that get directly involved in working with them. And then that creates this strange middle ground where we will get a lot of stuff. It feels like less so these days than we did, but we'll get a lot of content that is really something that's promotional for PETA, but has the veneer of being music news because they're working with this or that artist. Like this happened a lot when, say, like Rise Against was really big because Tim was, you know, a huge animal rights guy. But we used to have to like juggle a lot of stories where we look at it and go like, is this news or is this something that's just promotional for PETA, but they've kind of looped a band we talk about into it. And that from the start has been something that's been kind of strange to jump around. Anyways, though, go on, Hallie. Sorry for interrupting you there.
No, that's okay. I don't know. I think, you know, they're activists and they believe really, really strongly in what they do. You know, it's not, they're not, I totally get where sometimes their tactics are shady. And I've definitely read stuff where I feel like they've pulled something that I'm like, meh. But I almost like can't talk about this video. I found it like so completely, it like completely destroyed me. And like, you know, I do think there are things that, you know, maybe are unavoidable where maybe we do need to test on animals, but there are just so many things where we don't. And I think if the video sort of makes people think of that or makes them think twice before they buy shampoo or a household product or a thing that just does not need to be tested on animals at this point, we know what ingredients are safe on humans. And like, we just really don't need to be like torturing animals anymore. Sorry. I like won't talk about that part about it anymore, but I think like, I don't know, I think they're activists and they believe so strongly in what they're doing that they are just sort of trying to figure out what are the most effective tactics. And I kind of admire that. I totally get where maybe you guys have had interactions with them that have felt, maybe under like, maybe they're just not being totally honest about their identity or whatever. But I think in the end, they're people that their aim is true. You know, they're fighting for something that they think is right, and they're trying to figure out the most effective ways to get their messaging out there. And I kind of have no problem with that, you know?
Well said. I feel so much shamed. And I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I'm like, crass is great. And then this is, you know, crass tactics or semi-crass tactics. And I'm like, shame on PETA, you know? So. Where is Adam? I'm not sure. I'm still pro Iggy Pop.
And I think he did donate the song in some ways, right? By, you know, because normally there would be like a music licensing fee thing, I would assume, associated with this. And if he says, no, go ahead and use my song, then I think that is a donation of sorts, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. What I guess confused me with the headline is they were like, Iggy Pop donates song. And to me, that sounds like he's giving all the revenue from that song or signing the song to PETA. What he did is he gave them a free license to use the song with that specific video, you know?
Oh, I see what you're saying. But in a way, I mean, I don't know with an artist that big and an organization like PETA, like I know there are so many factors that go into stuff like this, but I would imagine maybe the music licensing could have been a hefty thing. So it's actually, I think maybe it was like generous that he just said, go ahead and use this song, you know?
Well, it's not just the song, right? Like they're slapping his name all over the press that they're putting out for, right?
So, yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a good point.
So yeah, anyways, that's there. I mean, unrelated, this was on I heard this on NPR the other day, and it struck me as a strange string of words to put together. But there is an ongoing monkey shortage right now because of the coronavirus. Because you have so much like testing of corona vaccines that you know for better or worse potentially need a monkey for, there are not actually that many monkeys that are like in circulation. So
we got one in the White House, we can use that one.
I was gonna make some sort of like just get some Republicans in there, but I don't know if that's a good idea. All right, so we're gonna jump just to a piece of news that a lot of people reacted to because a lot of people love this band. Pop, they have a new EP that's coming out. The EP is called This Place Sucks Ass, and it's about 2020. It's coming out on October 23rd via their Little Dipper imprint, which in Canada is a Universal-backed imprint, and in the States puts stuff out on Rise Records. So they've released a new song called Rot, and the whole thing is going to be put together on a live stream show, which it seems like more and more bands are doing at this point, not the cheapy, you know, we're going to get a cell phone and go on Instagram live stream show, but like actual produced live stream shows. So they have one that's coming out. It's going to be broadcast from Sneaky D's in Toronto on October 23rd at 9 PM Eastern via the streaming platform Noon Chorus. So they're selling tickets to that at the moment. This is technically the band's proper follow-up to 2019's LP Morbid Stuff. So you can check out Rot on Punk News right now. This record has six songs on it. Included on there is the song Anaphylaxis, which was a early isolation single that the band put out. So they put it out in, I don't know, like April or something like that. And their cover of Granddaddy's AM 180 that was released a month or so back. So anyways, I don't know if there's anything to talk about here, but this is coming out. People are excited. People like pop. There we go.
But apparently not us, because we're not going to say anything about it.
No, well, I threw this song into the mix at like the last minute with no prep. So yes, I like pup. Pup
are good. We all people. Like pup.
Yeah, anyway, so there you go. There's a puppy bee coming out. Hallie, you want to play a song?
Oh yeah, sure. So I don't remember how I stumbled upon this, but I love it. This song is called Squint. Do you guys know this band? They're from Boston. Do you know them, John?
I do not.
They're, I would say this reminds me of like if just straight up like good old fashioned American pop punk, i.e. like Blink-182 met like with something a little bit cooler and a little more lo-fi, maybe like Waves or something like that. I'm like really, really liking this album that they put out. I think it was much earlier this year, but still this year. The album is called Uncool Ghouls. Ghouls as in like ghoulies and ghosties and yeah, Halloween shit. Uncool Ghouls. And I don't know. I like this entire album. So I'm sort of randomly going to say, well, I'll just play the first track, which is called Topanga.
Some Halloween shit from Halle. And
Halloween shit coming at you September 2020.
So someone randomly on Twitter today was like speculating that like maybe the one good thing about the coronavirus is it'll be the thing that kills those Spirit Halloween stores. Like this will be
like... It's awesome. How dare anyone say that? I am extremely against that.
All right, John, we got a bunch of short stories here to wrap things up. You want to run through all three of these? You think they're all worth it?
Yes, well, one of them, we actually just got an email, though, due to our live broadcast, even though we don't broadcast live.
This
is from Skittles the Gorilla, and he says, I take your comment about the White House very insultingly. To the contrary, apes, greater and lesser apes, can feel emotion and compassion for other greater and lesser apes. And we also only throw fecal matter at each other once in a while. So Skittles the gorilla, we apologize, Skittle. So anyways, Death Valley Girls have put out a new song. And it is called Under the Spell of Joy. And I dug this track a lot. Death Valley Girls are a band from California. They got kind of the classic rock, punk, goth. They got a little bit of Halloween shit going on. And I think they're a rad band. They're good friends with the Coat Hangers. I'm a Coat Hangers maniac. And Death Valley Girls are kind of the evil Coat Hangers. But Coat Hangers are kind of evil. So if you flip it, Death Valley Girls are just a little bit more evil. And so I dig this band and I dig this track and it's cool and I'm excited.
It's fun.
I also liked it.
Yeah. You should check it out.
Go ahead, Adam.
No, I was just telling the people. The video is on Punk News if you wanna check this out. So anyways, continue on. The Melvins, the band John has never spoken about. Tell us who the Melvins are.
Early on the show. The Melvins are releasing a new Melvins 1983 EP. And you're like, John, what are the Melvins 1983? I thought it was just the Melvins. The Melvins 1983 are original guitarist, Buzz Osborne on guitar and vocals, original drummer, Mike Dillard on drums, who left the band in like 80, he left the band in 83, and Dale Crover, who has drummed for the band since 1983 on bass. That's Melvins 1983, and they play kind of punkier, faster stuff. Well, actually, that's not true, actually, now that I think about it. They basically play Melvins music, and they're putting another Melvins 1983 EP. They put out a Melvins 1983 album in 2013, which I think is one of the best Melvins 2010 records, and that's saying a lot because they put out about 10 records in 2010, 10 albums, that is, or maybe even more. So the new 1983 EP, it sounds rad, it's low, it's heavy, it's spooky, a little bit of Halloween shit there. And it's not super surprising, but it's the Melvins being consistently quality, but also bending what they do here and there, so it's always fresh, and it's a constant stream. I mean, you could argue that they put out too much stuff, because this year they put out 5 EPs or 6 EPs alone and other stuff, so essentially 2 albums worth, and they're just not stopping, and I'm loving it, man. I'm a big fan. Although, I'll give you guys a little bit of inside info. I shouldn't even say this. I mean, I haven't verified this. This is me speculating. There is somewhat of a fear that it might somewhat be near the end of the Melvins. I hope it's not, and the Melvins would resoundingly deny this. However, Buzz Osborne did have a solo thing planned this year, and Dale Crover had a solo thing, planned a solo thing after Buzz Osborne's solo thing. So I don't know, man. I hope all is good in the Melvins camp. Maybe they just maybe they just need a little time apart. You know what I mean? Then again, being the Melvins, maybe they're using coronavirus to like be super prolific. Anyways, I'm psyched. And I love, I'm being long-winded. The Melvins are an extremely interesting band because they exist in different incarnations. There's the Melvins. There's Big Melvins, which is Melvins in Big Business. There's Melvins Light, which is the Melvins plus Trevor Dunn. There's Melvins 1983, as I just discussed. There's Classic Melvins now with Buzz, Dale, and Stephen of Red Cross. And there's 4 Bass Melvins, which is Buzz, Dale, Stephen of Red Cross, and the guy from, David Yow's band, Butthole Surfers. David Yow's not in Butthole Surfers. Don't listen to that. However, the bass player from the Butthole Surfers. And so the Melvins are a fascinating band. And if you are a mid-level band and you're listening to this podcast and you're like, John, we're a mid-level band. How can we sustain ourselves over decades? Follow the Melvins model. That's what I'm saying.
All right. So the final story we want to talk to you about is... Does anyone Holly, do you have a Melvins insight? Because I certainly don't.
I don't. I don't have any Melvins insight.
All right. So there you go. Aaron Carnes has been in multiple ska and ska influenced bands, including Narboots and Flat Planet. Now, recently he contributed to the new album by the ska punkers and John Gentile proteges, Omnigon. I don't know if they're your proteges, John, but they're a band you've talked about. Today, which is to say 2 days ago when we posted the story, Carnes announced that he is releasing a book on ska. It's called In Defense of Ska. It's described as a mix of interviews, essays, personal stories, historical snapshots, obscure anecdotes, and think pieces. In Defense of Ska dissects, analyzes, and celebrates ska in exactly the way fans have been craving for decades. The book comes out in April 2021 on the Clash Books publisher. So there you go. It's coming. It's happening. In Defense of Ska. Someone needed to do it.
John, does ska need defending? Has ska ruined what? Did ska have a good thing going and they ruined it through over silliness and overt silliness? Or does ska need defending in 2020 because it really is at its core profoundly interesting, influential, and important and have a great message? Or now that ska is somewhat again cool because it's post-chic and that it was kind of funny. It's post-camp, I mean. For a lot of people, I love ska and they're being silly, but now people actually love ska again. So do we need a defensive ska book? Hallie, ska, defend it or no defend it? What do you say?
I don't think it needs defending, but I can see why someone would say that. And like maybe, I don't know, I feel badly because is it maybe punks that ruined ska, right? Like, is it punks that made it silly? It wasn't really like actual ska musicians. It was like punks that made it silly, right?
That's true.
So anyhow, I can see why someone would feel like they needed to say that. And I think I would read this. As I said, ska and reggae has kind of turned into my COVID soundtrack because my nerves need to be soothed and uplifted. So this is what I'm turning to. So yeah, I'm fully in support of all things ska right now.
I feel like that's the mood. I feel like ska is having something of like a 2020 moment where we're where we've decided the culture has decided that like of all the horrible shit that we have to deal with right now, we're gonna give ska a break because it's not harming us. But
totally.
Yeah, I would read this too. I mean, if anything, I think that we need an In Defense of Ska because all of these defend pop punk dinks are too loud with their pop punk defense that is unnecessary. So I think the ska community needs their own. That's what I'm saying. So anyways, John, where are we? We're at the end. Do you know the piece of music you want to play?
Well, I played Toots, so you can play a song or I can play Canadian.
We played Toots. The universe played Toots. But, yeah, okay, let's see. Do I have a thing?
I'm doing Adam a solid. See, I avoid playing Canadian music on the Puntley's podcast because that's all Adam does, and I feel he's somewhat ethnocentrist towards the race of Canada. However, there's a band called the Dub Rifles, which is a little-known, almost unknown band. I think it's 1980, 1984. And they put out two singles and disappeared. And recently, the main Dub Rifle, and it's a ska band. Oh, how fitting. It's a ska / reggae / punk band, and a tasteful and well-done one at that. And they put out a compilation that you can get for like $12 on Bandcamp or $9 to download. And it's called No Town, No Country. And it's both of their EPs and a bunch of live stuff. And it is, if you like two-tone, but you've already made your way through Madness, the Special, the Selector, and you want something Canadian, Dub Rifles is your track. This is Reluctant Host by the Dub Rifles out of Canada, Adam's hometown, Canada.
Yeah.
I'm a reluctant host.
Show. If you want to send us email, podcast@punknews.org is how you do that. Hallie, last word to you. How's your kid?
Oh my god, my kid's amazing. My kid's totally amazing. He was rocking out to Suffragette City tonight. He does this thing where it starts with one hand. Like when he hears music, he likes just one hand starts to like thrash around and then it spreads to the other hand and then it goes to his whole body. It's amazing. He's a great kid.
Does the fake ending of that song really, really blow his mind?
Yes, absolutely. He had just stopped running around the couch and then realized he had to run around the couch one more time.
Fantastic. All right. See you next week.